But you know, there was more to this time period than what comes to mind when we say the Victorian age. Let's look at a few dramatic areas of impact. The first being the Intellectual Revolution, and the second, the Age of Imperialism. Though many of the people were pleased with the Victorian values of the 1800s, the duty, the industry, the morality, and the domesticity I just mentioned, and though many people were profoundly impacted by the revival known as the Second Awakening of the 1800s, in other words, from one perspective, society looked pretty good, yet there is another perspective. Along with the obvious fact that during this time period, people like the Earl of Shaftesbury, who we've already talked about, were needed to alleviate the suffering of the poor and downtrodden. For them, life was hardly rosy and good. But there were also people in this moment of time who were actively looking for an overarching system of belief which would explain the world and the people in it without resorting to God. This intellectual pursuit and the spiritual forces behind it would eventually wreak a terrible havoc on the world. We call this the Intellectual Revolution, beginning with Charles Darwin and his theory of evolution, and continuing on to Karl Marx, who used Darwin's evolution to provide the scientific justification for atheistic communism. Now, these two, along with several other philosophers, began to literally change the way people viewed the world. Why? How did a couple of guys have so much impact on the world even to this day? Well, first of all, you have to remember that their theories didn't occur in a vacuum. Darwin didn't wake up one day and say to a world that totally believed in God and divine creation, "Whoa, no such thing. Hey, everybody, if we take a long enough time, like billions of years, and say that little itty-bitty changes over time can turn a gorilla into a man, and then we don't need a creator God, yippee." No, it didn't happen like that. You see, there was a preparation that took place over many years for a concept that had actually been suggested in ancient times, beginning with Greek philosophers who believed in a theory of evolution. Did you know it's that old? Though that idea went underground for a few thousand years, the Enlightenment and Age of Reason in the 1600s and 1700s brought about not only the French Revolution, but also a revolution in thinking about the world. There'd been many who had not only wondered if there were a God, but there were those who devoutly believed there was no God. Now, isn't that a weird thing, to think they devoutly believed when they rejected God? They philosophized and they pondered and they wondered, how could you explain the world, mankind, meaning in life, our purpose in the world, all without resorting to God? That's what they wanted to get rid of. Now, let me point out that part of being a human being is having a deep need to believe in something. God created us with that God-shaped hole, that God-shaped hunger in our being that only He can truly fill. But if we turn away from Him, we don't stay neutral. We turn to something else, something to fill our hearts and minds and spirits to give us meaning. And since Jesus is the truth, the true truth and nothing but the truth, to turn away from Him is to turn to a lie. Does that make sense? And that's just what happened in this case. Darwin's grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, who was a noted physician of his time, he suggested a theory of evolution in the 1790s. And a few decades later, a Scottish geologist named Charles Lyell traveled in England and on the European continent studying the various landforms in the 1820s, which resulted in the publication of one of the most influential books ever written, Principles of Geology. Now, his book had at its foundation two concepts. Number one, the Earth was extremely old. And number two, what we see today are the same processes that have always been. There are no catastrophes like the flood, thank you very much. He had seen with his own eyes as he traveled, and he figured out with his own mind what had happened in the ancient past. And because he used a stealthy approach in what he wrote, what I mean is he purposefully held back many of his observations and many of his conclusions so as to not arouse the religious folks of his time, his book became widely approved, even by churchmen, to the point that it became scientific orthodoxy. That means people just believed it. They said, oh yeah, this is the way it is. And it took some time before people would recognize that, in effect, Lyell's book with these two concepts had thrown out the biblical story of creation and the flood. And by that time, it was so firmly fixed in the scientific community as the true description of Earth's geology. Now, at this point, enter Charles Darwin. He traveled as a companion to the captain of the British ship, the Beagle, and also as the ship's naturalist from 1831 to 1836. He read this book, this Principles of Geology, during his voyage to South America, and he used it to interpret what he was seeing. He actually wrote a letter to his family saying that he was seeing the various landforms, quote, as though he had the eyes of Lyell. Charles Lyell, who had written Principles of Geology. Okay, so do you see what's happening here? Here's a guy who's predisposed towards a general idea, like evolution, for explaining the way we got fish and birds and people and mountains without having to resort to the Bible's description of creation. And he just happens to have the latest and greatest book, which says that the earth is really, really old and that the processes we see today are the way it's always been. Rain falls, rivers flow, volcanoes erupt, period, the end. The truth according to Lyell. So, when Darwin sees all of these new places, new kinds of birds and other critters, when he meets the rather shockingly uncivilized people of Tierra del Fuego, they were tribal people and they really did shock this 19th century Englishman, all of these factors combine in his brain to produce a new version of evolution, a totally mechanistic universe, which uses natural selection, that is, without any rhyme or reason or design, evolving new species under the natural law of the survival of the fittest. And in 1859, when he published his book, The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, or The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life, it touched a resounding chord for many who were looking for a way to explain life apart from God. Now, it's important to realize that Darwin actually did see unusual sights, unusual creatures, unusual people. He saw things that cried out for an explanation. Why is it this way instead of that way? Why are there these differences, et cetera, et cetera? But the problem was that there were other explanations other than the one he came up with, explanations that involved a wise and loving creator. And you see, Darwin's theory was more about the philosophic stance behind the theory than it was about the actual physical things he saw. Because since his first description of evolution, it hasn't mattered to most people that the fossil record hasn't actually confirmed his theory. And it hasn't mattered that the evidence actually points towards an intelligent and personally involved designer. Instead, what mattered for Darwinian evolution was that it was stated in such a way as to appear thoroughly scientific and to provide the scientific rationalism for saying we know longer need God. With that in mind, let me quote from the book, fabulous book called The Soul of Science by Charles Thaxton and Nancy Piercy. They said, Darwin's style of intellectual attack against those who saw the world as something designed or with some form of meaning in it was to portray his opponents' theories not merely as competing scientific explanations, but as interlopers that had no business being in the same ring at all. He criticized concepts such as divine creation, not so much for being mistaken scientific ideas, but for falling outside the realm of science altogether. Mechanistic, naturalistic forces were put forth not as superior scientific causes, but as the only causes admissible in science. Isn't that wild?